It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 55 degrees under mostly to partly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they are showing 64% humidity, southerly winds at 14 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a few scattered showers. Those scattered showers are expected to go through the night with partly cloudy skies overnight too. These southerly winds are expected to turn to the west and then back to the south tomorrow. Pretty nice weather it looks like, a little cloudy for tomorrow. The rain is expected to begin at 4 p.m. on Sunday and go through Tuesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, many Kodiak fishermen are in Bristol Bay right now. KMXT's Brian Venois brings us an update on how that season is going. And Alaska wildfire managers have seen the least amount of acreage burned so far this summer, ever. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. says that after weighing the risks to civilians, it will still send Ukraine cluster munitions. Colin Kahl, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, laid out the administration's decision today to supply weapons that have been banned by roughly 120 countries.
Russia has been using cluster munitions indiscriminately since the start of this war in order to attack Ukraine. By contrast, Ukraine is seeking DPICM rounds in order to defend its own sovereign territory. Second, compared to Russian cluster munitions, the DPICM rounds we will provide Ukraine have an extremely low failure or dud rate.
The lower the dud rate, the lower the risk of unexploded bomblets that could maim or kill civilians who may come in contact with the small munitions long after a conflict has ended. The leaders and journalists of the Wall Street Journal issued an impassioned plea for the release of reporter Evan Gershkovich on the 100th day of his captivity by the Russian government. NPR's David Folkenflik reports the newspaper's executives argue he has been held on spying charges in retribution for U.S. support of Ukraine against the Russian invasion.
The Wall Street Journal's newsroom took to social media today to keep public attention focused on Gershkovich, who was detained on a reporting trip to the provincial city of Yekaterinburg. It was the first such arrest of a U.S. journalist since the Cold War. The journal denies the spying allegations. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has denounced the charges. Gershkovich is said by family and colleagues to have maintained good spirits despite the ordeal. In a joint statement marking his 100th day in jail, editor-in-chief Emma Tucker and publisher Alma Latour jointly released a statement saying, quote, "Journalism is not a crime. They promised not to rest until he was freed." David Folkenflik, NPR News.
The white gunman behind the 2019 mass shooting at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, has been sentenced to 90 consecutive life sentences. Becca Moore of member station KERA reports a 24-year-old could still be sent to death row.
Patrick Crucius drove to El Paso from Allen nearly 4 years ago to target Latinos in a racist attack. He killed 23 people and injured nearly two dozen more before he was arrested. Then in February, Crucius pleaded guilty to several federal hate crime and gun charges. He could still face the death penalty in a separate Texas case that has yet to go to trial in state court.
That's Becca Moore reporting. The U.S. economy is coming off another month of strong job growth, although, as PNC senior economic advisor Stuart Hoffman notes, the gain of 209,000 was slower than what was widely projected.
This is still, as you say, slower, but still a good speed. It's like going maybe from 80 miles an hour down to the speed limit.
Hoffman and others say it's likely the Federal Reserve will resume an aggressive campaign of interest rate hikes to further cool inflation. The Dow closes down 187 points. It's NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Many Kodiak fishermen spend the summer salmon season around the archipelago, but many others also head to Bristol Bay to harvest sockeye. KMXT's Brian Venois is from Dillingham. He was in town visiting family last week and stopped by the station to talk to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report director, Corinne Smith, for an update on how the season is going on the other side of the Alaska Peninsula.
So, Corinne, obviously last year was this huge, unprecedented run of fish, but it looks like this year is actually pretty similar to the previous record, which was 2 years ago in 2021. So would you mind telling us how it's been compared to, like, maybe the averages or to how that year was? What does it look like?
Yeah, so this year in Bristol Bay is very different, and I think each season sort of starts that way. Last year was a booming year. Some people I talked to called it double a boom year. It was 79 million salmon returning to Bristol Bay. That's 80% above the 20-year average. It was just absolutely incredible and unheard of. And so far, we're seeing the run come in a bit slower. There's been some days of closed fishing around the bay, and I think people are getting kind of antsy, honestly, and they're sort of expecting fish to come in around this weekend into the 4th of July. So this year's forecast is more comparable to 2021, which was less of a booming year, and the pace compared to this time in 2021 is down a bit. But the numbers are coming back in Port Mueller, the Port Mueller test fishery, so they are expecting to see that run pick up through the weekend and sort of around 4th of July. And biologists are pretty confident that the run will be strong this year.
Yeah, and then so speaking of the biologists, I know that you talked to a couple of them just yesterday and just kind of throughout the whole season because they're kind of the experts on this whole thing. What have they been saying? Has the Nishigak openings have been trying to a little bit delayed to try to save some of those kings? Is there anything about that you want to talk about?
Right. Yeah. So this year has been a big focus on the Nishigak district, and kings have been declining there. They have not made escapement goals 5 of the last 6 years. So this year the Board of Fish made several regulatory changes in an attempt to delay commercial fishing in the Nishigak to allow more kings to return upriver. So this is pretty unprecedented and new for Bristol Bay, but they delayed that opener for sockeye until a certain escapement threshold was met, which was actually this past Sunday on June 26th. And it was a trade-off. Commercial fishermen delayed fishing in the Nishigak to allow more kings to escape upriver. It's a big investment in conservation of kings, and they're hoping it will be successful. We have yet to see how many have escaped and if those escapement goals will be made, but it's a big change for the Nishigak this year.
So, and compared to like these last few years, like a lot of people are looking at the smaller amount of fish, and the talk of the fleet every year is just always going to be the base prices. I know that we can't have the official prices until, you know, whenever they put those out, whether that's before season like Peter Pan did the last couple of years or at the end of the season, that's kind of become the more traditional thing. There's tons of speculation. Is there any range or rumors that you're heard of that you are willing to share with us here?
Right. Yeah, it is all rumors still. Nothing official has been announced, which was a change from the past 2 years. Like you said, Peter Pan Seafoods announced a base price, which fishing crews were very happy about just to have a sort of gauge on the season. But this year they have not announced a price. People are very frustrated and concerned that that is because it's going to be dramatically lower. Economists are pointing to the massive harvest last year sort of flooding the market, and retailers are still working on selling that off in markets around the U.S. and worldwide. So given the supply is higher, they say demand will be lower. We have our sources and our ear to the ground on that, but no official price yet.
That was KMXT's Brian Venois talking to KDLG's Corinne Smith, who is the director of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Alaska wildfire managers have seen the least ever acreage burned so far this summer, as damp and cool weather conditions have persisted across much of the state. Just 1,100 acres have burned compared to over 3.1 million that burned last year. Fire Weather Program Manager Heidi Strader says it's the lowest ever recorded by the first week of July.
Usually we have about 10 times this kind of acreage going, really. It's incredibly low.
For South Central, fire officials and National Weather Service meteorologists predict continued cold and wet conditions, which means the region is likely to avoid major burns this year.
And if the bigger trees and the deeper organics have not had enough dry weather for them to dry out and become engaged in fire activity, then it's very unlikely that we're going to see a big season.
Without large fires to fight in-state, some Alaska wildland firefighting crews have been sent to Canada, which is experiencing an historic wildfire season. Lily Coyle, a public information officer with the State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection, says some crews are staying in Alaska and taking advantage of the lack of fires to install 10 fuel breaks around fire-prone communities. Their goal is to cut 800 acres of fuel breaks this summer.
We're working on fuel breaks in each Division of Forestry and Fire Protection area across the state. So it's actually been a really productive summer for us and season for us and helping to proactively protect communities.
Not every part of Alaska is expected to avoid wildfire danger. The largest fire currently burning in the state is near Delta Junction, and a red flag warning was issued yesterday for the eastern Alaska range and surrounding areas until Friday. Beth Ibsen, a spokesperson for the Alaska Fire Service, says that the persistent wet weather has prevented fires that started from getting out of hand, but she warns against reckless behavior.
While it's been a really wet summer, there still is a chance that, you know, if you're careless with a fire, that you could start a wildfire that could be devastating.
For information on burn restrictions wherever you are in Alaska, visit dnr.alaska.gov/burn. Petersburg's Catholic Church caught fire yesterday afternoon in a blaze that continued for nearly 10 hours. KFSK's Thomas Copeland has the story.
Don Koenigs has attended St. Catherine's of Siena Catholic Church for over 40 years. He was one of just two parishioners at midday mass on Thursday.
I saw smoke while I was inside from the skylight in the church. We were just ready to receive Holy Communion. I looked up and I saw smoke billowing up above. So I ran out of the church immediately and could see that the church was on fire. I ran in and told Father, we were called 911, and I said, you have to take Jesus out of the tabernacle.
At 12:29 p.m., emergency dispatch received multiple calls as neighbors and passersby caught sight of the flames. Fire, EMS, search and rescue, and law enforcement were all on the scene within minutes. As the firefighters tackled the blaze, smoke billowed from St. Catherine's down into Petersburg. At Petersburg Medical Center, CEO Phil Hofstetter saw the smoke as it blew down the hill to the clinic.
It was almost like it was porous. It went right through the building.
And that meant scores of appointments were quickly cancelled.
Well, we closed all our non-essential services right now, and we sent staff home. We put in some air scrubbers into the different units for long-term care.
Back at St. Catherine's, crowds gathered as the church roof began to cave in, and its spire buckled under the heat of the flames.
Bringing tears to my eyes earlier.
I've never seen anything like this. Lived here 48 years.
It's going to be tough on all the parishioners there and stuff. You're going to need a lot of community support.
Among the onlookers stood Father Jose. This is his first year at St. Catherine's.
So heartbreaking. So heartbreaking. But we will survive, you know. That's our hope. And I want to thank all the fire department works. They are working hard to control this fire.
As the first hour rolled on, more volunteers arrived on the scene. Some, like Taylor Norheim, even raced in from the water to fight the fire.
I got here late even. I was out on the boat. I had to go cancel work for the day because if I didn't do it and nobody was doing it, somebody's got to do it.
The Petersburg Fire Department has to rely on volunteers, many with full-time jobs like Norheim. And Fire Department spokesperson Dave Berg said that means when a massive blaze like this occurs, the worst he's seen in a quarter century, they can find themselves with just a skeleton crew.
We showed up with three engines. One engine came in with only a driver. It's capable of carrying a crew of six. And another engine came in short-staffed also.
Do you think you could have saved more of the church if you had more volunteers?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Our volunteer staff has been declining over the years. There's just, people don't seem to be as interested in either fire service or volunteering as a whole.
And Aaron Hankins, the director of fire and EMS, said in a race against time, fewer volunteers can have a massive impact.
Would you have done this operation differently if you'd had more volunteers, Aaron?
We might have been able to get up on the roof before the entire thing was compromised, but by the time we got access and had enough volunteers to do it, it was kind of not really safe to go on there.
As the afternoon turned to evening, the flames died down, but refused to die out. 4-inch thick wooden beams, tightly layered on the roof of the sanctuary, blocked the hoses from extinguishing the flames smouldering underneath. And the attic of the fellowship was just as hard to reach. And so the chainsaws came out to carve up chunks of timber to allow for a way for the water to get in.
So I think for this week...
Across a car park in the Parks and Rec gymnasium, the St. Catherine's congregation gathered for communion, prayer, and to plan for the days ahead. Father Joseph was living at the back of the church before it burned down. And in a brief moment of levity, he told the parishioners he just brought home some groceries.
I was about to cook today. I just brought some pork. And I served enough for it. I think, maybe roasted now with the fire.
The congregation hopes to assemble for Mass this weekend in the grotto next to the burnt-out church. But they don't yet know what can be salvaged from inside. As the parishioners left the gymnasium, they stopped to watch the firefighters still battling the stubborn flames burning in the church roof. It was past 10 p.m. when the final hose was turned off. Just one injury among the multi-agency army of Petersburg volunteers, a broken finger in the fire crew. The cause of the blaze will be investigated in the days and weeks to come by local and state fire marshals. But for now, St. Catherine's of Siena is reduced to a shell. In Petersburg, I'm Thomas Copeland.
Anchorage spends a lot of time, money, and effort helping the city's homeless people with their most basic needs, food, shelter, and health care. But when experts look at the big picture, they see a lopsided housing market, where limited supply drives up rent and home prices and housing insecurity that leads to homelessness. It's one root cause of homelessness that two Anchorage Assembly members are taking aim at with a proposal to dramatically simplify the city's residential zoning rules. If it passes, Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports it could trigger years of new housing construction, or it could get squashed right out of the gate.
There's a truism that comes up a lot when Alaska experts talk about ending homelessness.
Housing is the pure solution to homelessness. Hard stop.
We know that the answer to ending homelessness is housing.
You will hear me say it every time I get the chance to speak. The solution to homelessness is housing. Thank you.
In recent years, Anchorage taxpayers, charities, and businesses have invested millions of dollars converting hotels into low-income housing. These units have helped hundreds of people sleeping in cars and tents and emergency shelters get into permanent housing. But those pockets are only so deep, and there are only so many properties that can be converted. In an ideal free market, this wouldn't even be a public sector problem. Private developers would build the supply to meet the demand. But housing construction in Anchorage has been in a long decline. Census Bureau data show that most of Anchorage's housing was built in the 70s, when the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System was being built, and in the 80s, after the oil started flowing. By the 2010s, fewer new homes were built than were still in use from the 1950s. So home prices and rents have climbed, and so has homelessness.
Most of our real estate is over 40 years old in Anchorage. It means we're not even building enough to replace the older homes that are getting dilapidated.
Anchorage Assemblymember Kevin Cross wants to dramatically simplify the residential zoning rules that limit new home building in the Anchorage Bowl, Eagle River, Chugiak, and Girdwood. Right now, zoning rules block building anything but single-family homes and duplexes in huge swaths of the municipality. Cross, who is a commercial real estate broker, says the current rules drive up building costs excessively and also create perverse incentives for developers to build extra-large, single-family homes and duplexes on a given piece of land instead of multiple modest homes that could have the same overall footprint and number of bedrooms.
We just need to get out of our own way. Let's simplify zoning. Let's get private development back at the table.
Cross and Assemblymember Meg Zalatel, who is also the executive director of the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness, are working together on the residential zoning reform ordinance. In the Anchorage Bowl, it would take 15 existing residential zoning types and collapse them into two. The specifics of those simplified zoning types aren't in the proposal. Instead, it sets a goal to write them after the ordinance passes and have the new rules go into effect in 2025. But the intent is clear. Simpler building rules and more homes per acre. Cross says that will lead to more affordable housing. There are critics of Cross and Zalatel's proposal. Two former Anchorage Assembly members who worked on the current zoning rules told the Anchorage Daily News it would decimate single-family home neighborhoods and that it would be like throwing a bomb at those neighborhoods. Cross says if a homeowner's immediate reaction to zoning reform is fear, he asks them,
if you had to buy your house today, could you afford it? And the answer is alarmingly no.
He says that plays a big role in today's labor shortages, out-migration, and declining school enrollment.
Affordable housing solves all our problems. It gets us the workforce we need, it attracts skill, and it attracts competent labor. It provides that, and it quits the rapid inflation of housing prices that drive people out of their homes. That's why I'm so passionate about this zoning reform.
The ordinance is scheduled for a public hearing at the Assembly's July 25th meeting. Cross expects that hearing will be delayed to allow for more assembly deliberation in work sessions. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Job growth slows. I'm Nova Sapa with a Marketplace Minute. The labor market remains healthy, but employers added only 209,000 jobs last month. That's the smallest advance in the Labor Department's monthly count in 2.5 years. Average hourly pay rose by an annual rate of 4.5%, outpacing inflation. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is in China to improve economic ties. China's government, which has chafed at export bans on advanced computer chips, said it was looking for concrete actions. Artificial intelligence-enabled robots featured at a news conference today in Geneva, Switzerland, at a United Nations summit that's looking at ways to use AI to fight poverty and hunger. The robots said they would be effective leaders and would not rebel against humans. I'm Nova Sapo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 7th day of July, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 5:20. It will set again at 11:08. That will give us 17 hours and 48 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 12 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 78 degrees, set in 1984, and our record low was 39 degrees, set in 1982. Well, let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with revised Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 13, date issued 11:05 on the 4th of July. There will be a 105-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th in the following areas in the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kijuyak Bay section, will remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The East Side Kodiak District, except for Passaic Bay, will remain closed. The Afognak District, except for the Duck Bay section, will close at 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th, and the Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, and Iziut Bay sections remain closed. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th in the following areas. In the Cape Alatak, Humpy Dead Man, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. The Outer Iakulik and Halba Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Mainland District and the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District. After 12:01 a.m. July 6th, until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak King salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purseine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for the seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area, including the Cape Igbac section, as designated in the North Shelikof Strait sockeye salmon management plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following areas that are currently open until further notice will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. The Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters. Closed waters for Saltry Creek, stream number 259415, are the normal closed waters as described in regulation from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th in the Fowl Bay or in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. As previously announced, cost recovery fisheries have begun in Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-46559. That's 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing, and this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The tide is quite low now if you have a boat that might get hung up on a piling or would just like to do some tide pooling. Our low tide happened at 11:51, a little over a half hour ago here on the east side. That was a minus 1.6-foot tide. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 12:22. Oh, just happened 4 minutes ago. That was a minus 2-foot tide in Larson Bay. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Tuesday, July 11th at 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. On Wednesday, July 12th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday, July 13th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office with questions at 907-486-9310. And remember, assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live-stream notifications. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. South 20 today, turning to southwest 20 tonight, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20 and 5-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 today and seas to 4 feet. Southwest 20 tonight, seas coming up to 5 feet. And south 20 tomorrow with 4-foot seas coming down to 2 feet Saturday night. There will be a celebration of the life of Dr. Gilbert Bain tomorrow at the Kodiak College. That's happening at the Benny Benson Building starting at 1 p.m. There's a potluck to follow, so please bring your favorite dish to share. 1 p.m. tomorrow in the Benny Benson Building. A celebration of a life well lived will be held for Rod Murdoch at Fort Abercrombie's covered picnic area on Monday, July 10th, this coming Monday. The family invites all who knew Rod to celebrate the extraordinary life of a wonderful father, husband, brother, friend, and fix-it guy extraordinaire. Bring a dish to share, a story about Rod, and your favorite musical instrument. All are welcome. Rod's family will be at the covered picnic area at Fort Abercrombie on Monday, July 10th, from noon until the cows come home. Do you manage, teach, or perform blood collections? If so, you're invited to a free phlebotomy seminar being held on Tuesday, July 11th. That's next Tuesday, and Wednesday, July 12th. They're going on from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. The event is being hosted by the Center for Phlebotomy Education and CANA. Anyone involved in blood collection is welcome to attend. For more information, call them at 801-822-7220.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.